The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 13th chapter. As Jesus came out of the temple, one of the disciples said to Jesus, "Look, teacher, what large stones, what large buildings." Then Jesus asked, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked privately, "Tell us, when will this be? And what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am the one,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and country against country. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to the Lord. Please be seated. I'm half awake. It's morning. Early. If the sun is up, I can't tell. Light blocking shades. Did the alarm go off already? Without really waking, did I press snooze? How many times? Without looking, I reach for the phone on the bedside table. Now there is light coming from my phone. The first thing I ask is, "What time is it?" The phone tells me. Maybe I continue to lie in bed in the darkened room. Nicely done. Under the covers. Or I get up, I go to the bathroom, I go to the kitchen, I punch a cup of Keurig coffee out. Inevitably, I return to my phone. My oracle with all the answers I need to start my day. What's the weather? What's on my calendar? With whom am I meeting? In person or on Zoom? How should I get dressed? How much of me should get dressed? I have to go in. How far behind is the red line running this morning? The oracle is here. And then the headlines, quick check of the Globe, the Times, Wall Street Journal. What's going on outside my pillowed, shaded, muffled, double-paned fortress this morning? It's early. At least an hour before dawn, and the year is in that period between 66 and 70. of the Common Era. The author we know as Mark is just waking up. In the streets outside Mark's dwelling, a city comes to life, but which city? New Testament scholars have many theories. According to Adele Collins, whose commentary, as you may remember, is my go-to, according to Collins, it could be Rome. It could be Antioch. In any case, it is at least one full generation after the crucifixion of Jesus. And more recently, in the 60s, the Apostle Paul has likely been executed, probably in Rome. It's early, and at the same time, it's late. The author we know from tradition as Mark opens eyes, then squints and scans the walls for shadows, listens. What are the sounds coming from other dwellings in the neighborhood? Is anyone singing? Sighing? Weeping? Or is there an unnatural hush? No one daring to speak above a whisper. In the street, what's the rhythm? Women's feet shuffling sleepily, traveling to and from the community well to gather the water for the day? Or does the footfall have a cadence of a certain purpose, like soldiers on a mission? In the period between 66 and 70, Jews live under Roman occupation, and from Antioch to Jerusalem and beyond, all are likely to be waking to the sounds of war and rumors of war yet again. Apocalyptic, same old, same old. Back in the year 4 before the Common Era, so not so long after the best guess for the birth of Jesus, and not soon enough to have prevented the slaughter of the innocents, the death of King Herod the Great triggers revolts among the Jews under occupation, revolts led by an assortment of leaders with messianic pretensions. Judas, son of Azekias, Simon, a royal slave, revolting, Simon of Perea, and Anthrongaius, who has styled himself in David's image, the Shepherd King. Is anyone surprised that the Romans crushed these rebellions brutally? Thousands crucified, tens of thousands exiled, and that was back at the time of the infancy of Jesus. Now it's 70 years, give or take, later, and the evangelist Mark wakes up in the time of the conflict known as the Jewish War. And now it's the son, or maybe grandson, of the aforementioned revolutionary Judas, not the apostle, who is leading an uprising against Rome, seizing arms at Masada, marching on Jerusalem as liberator, king, Messiah. Again, Messiah has become a contested title. In such a time, the writer, to be known as Mark, listens and then watchfully rises from bed, goes about the usual things that a human does in the morning, and finally goes to a writing desk. Candle lighted, Mark continues work on a manuscript with the working title, The Beginning of the Good News of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The Beginning. A story about the beginning that changes everything forever after, from the first hour of waking to the last hour of the day, every day. This morning, Mark works on a lesson Jesus seeks to teach his friends, the ones who have been closest, saying, remember, my beloveds, whenever massive piles of stone tempt you to awe, count on this. Every stone, as great as these and greater, will crumble, topple, always. No exceptions. When you ask, friends, has this not always been the case? Also remember, in times like these, messiahs are a dime a dozen. They come and they go. Some will say they are the new King David. Some will even say they're me. Wars and rumors of war are commonplace. Earthquake and famines, what generation has ever avoided these? But now, a birthing has begun. A birthing to define today, each day, every day, beginning now. The birth pangs. After completing today's chapter, the one we know as the 13th, the story of Jesus' arrest, incarceration, and torture will begin in the 14th. The beginning of the story of Jesus Christ. The Jesus who hasn't raised an army against Rome, who hasn't stormed a city or a palace, who doesn't even carry a weapon, the Jesus whose crucifixion was a really pretty puny affair in comparison to other massive demonstrations of Rome's brutal power. Three crosses, insignificant. Jesus is one of only three. The burial is hasty and clandestine under the cover of night in a borrowed tomb. And yet, 3 days later, early in the morning, before dawn, look, one single great stone toppled, laying beside an empty tomb. And that's where that gospel ends. Even as Mark awakens in a world of wars and rumors of war, what was different for Mark and Mark's community in 66 before the Common Era thereabouts, what was different then is still just as different for you and me. Waking up on a November morning in 2021. Are there not wars and rumors of war? So commonplace. But in the midst of it, a birthing is happening. One of my earliest teachers of theology had a succinct way of referencing this, and now it's my time to give our book sale after church a little plug. You see this? The Last Things, Biblical and Theological Perspectives on Eschatology. Thank you, Paul Santmeier. Because I pulled this from the stack early this week and said, how timely. And then I opened up and there is an article by a theologian to whom I attribute the saving of my faith life. That is the teacher who helped me see what it means to be baptized and in the midst of others who are baptized and committed to helping me know more than everything breaks and everything dies. Robert Jensen. And uncharacteristically for Jensen, he puts this simply. To follow Jesus is to find yourself at the gate. I would say to use the gospel's imagery, to follow Jesus means to find yourself at the threshold of a womb in motion, where all the might of heaven and earth, breath, labor, all conspire for a beginning that is an utterly new life, crowning. As the Apostle Paul put it, for the death and resurrection means that Christ lives in me and I live in Christ, in the birthing of creation. With Mark the Evangelist, with the Apostle Paul, baptized into Christ's life, the life of crucifixion, burial, resurrection, means that we all wake up birth wet every morning. So even as our phones may tell us the time and calendars alert us to appointments where we'll have to show up, people we will see, the body that reaches out and grabs the phone, that body in which we wake up, belongs to Christ. And the power that gives us breath belongs to God. And the eyes that we have to see, the ears that we have to hear, the arms that we have to embrace, the feet that we have to take us to places where we probably shouldn't, according to some, go. All of this is the motion of love stronger than death. And it is now. It is now, and it is what makes it possible for us to sing the next hymn as if it were true, and here, because it is, and that hymn is My Lord, What a Morning.